What's going on, beautiful people? This is Mr. No Excuses with my man, Jay.
What's going on, world? How you doing today?
That's the energy I love, Jay.
Yes, sir. It's 2019 energy, man. You got to get it on.
I know that's right. Well, this is another episode of the Hidden Truths Podcast, where we provide a platform for therapy through conversation, rebuilding our community advocacy and trust one conversation, one day at a time. So that's what we're here to do, y'all, especially starting out the year 2019. I can't believe this. Can't believe I'm saying that already, 2019.
How long is it going to take you to actually put 19 on your documents when you sign them? Yeah, I mean, you know, I think I was putting 17 to at least my birthday in August.
Yeah, I don't know how long that's going to take, man. My mind is still like, wow, it's 2019. Yeah, it's going to take some time to get used to that. But nonetheless, here we are. Speaking of which, I'll be 34 in a month.
You old, man. Just claim it. You old.
Oh, I welcome that. I've been old since I was young. But yeah, man. So yeah, once again, the Hidden Truths Podcast, y'all. Once again, here with you live. So Jay, who you want to shout out this week for our community spotlight?
So for this 2019, our first Black owned business of the year goes to a friend of mine, Alexis. She runs E. Wade and Company, which is her hair salon. It's located in Sola Salons on, is that Mallet Creek near Trader Joe's. She's been doing hair for quite a while. I've known her for quite a while. Very beautiful woman. Go check her out. She does fantastic hair. I mean, you see them girls come in there look one way and they come out looking a total different person. I'm telling you, she does wonders with the clippers in them, shears and everything else. But yeah, definitely check her out. She's on Instagram. You know, I think it's Alexis Wade, E-L-E-X-I-S Wade on Instagram. So check her out.
Oh, she spelled Alexis with an E?
Yeah, with an E.
Oh, that's different. Okay.
Yeah, different.
Okay.
Another thing, it looks like she has a website, eWade, E-W-A-D-E, and company.glossgenius.com. So go check out. You know, trust me, I would not put you on to somebody that doesn't do a good job, especially where I go to the barbershop and get my hair cut every week. So definitely go check out, try it out, and give her a shout out if you can.
Yeah, I was about to say, when you mentioned Sola Solange, that's where your barber Reg is at, right?
Right. My barber Reg is actually the barber in that I go to, and yeah, she's right across from him.
Okay.
Actually, it's his sister-in-law, so, you know, it's all in the family. The whole family does creative work, so, you know.
That's how the rich stay rich.
Hey, keep, man, that's how you do it, man. That's how you do it. So definitely go check her out. You know, I'll definitely like to give her as much shout-out as I can, so yeah, definitely check her out.
All right, no doubt. Well, I always appreciate it. We love to spotlight our entrepreneurs out there that are doing their thing. Always good to invest in our own, help our communities grow. So always give a shout out to those places where shout outs are due. So, Jay, what's the good word for today, man?
Man, we got a good topic today. The topic for our lovely first podcast of 2009 is Working While Black.
Man, you mean 2019?
2019. See? Told you. I'm behind already. Behind already.
You're about 10 years behind.
I've been like that for a while. Working While Black. So this is a very controversial topic at times, and I know you get a lot of insight from people being in the corporate world. But we're going to take it from the stance of a corporate environment, with me being corporate, E being corporate, pretty much all our friends are corporate, and, you know, just going from that style to just seeing where, you know, we come from, what we've been through, and, you know, just some of the challenges we've seen. And, you know, to start off, I'm curious, E, why did you go corporate? What was your stance coming out of college to go corporate? What made you join the rat race?
The movie Boomerang.
Interesting. Oh, I gotta hear this. Interesting.
So, you seen Boomerang, right?
I have.
I would hope everybody that's listening to this, whether you of color or not, has seen the movie Boomerang, starring Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy was a marketing exec in the movie Boomerang, and he made corporate America look so fly. I mean, had all the women head over heels for him. know, lived in a nice luxury condo uptown, nice view of the skyline, loved what he did for his job. And even at that age, I was like, man, so that's what it's like to be in corporate America? That's what the 9-to-5 is like. Fly women every day, nice luxury amenities, going out on lavish trips on the company. I want to do that.
The facade. Right. Okay.
Well, it was a movie. Great movie, by the way. Still one of my favorite Eddie Murphy joints. But that, you know, I kind of say that jokingly, but in all seriousness, though, that was the norm. That still is kind of the norm and the expectation. You graduate high school, you go to college. You graduate college, you get a 9-to-5 in corporate America. So that's really all the insight that I had as a youth and adolescent was to go in corporate America, get a good job, make a decent living. And it was just as simple as that.
See, and that's funny you say that, Eso. I'm laughing because the reason I wanted to go to college because of a movie too. A lot of people may not. Now, my movie's not one of the Black Experience movies. My movie was The Secret to My Success with Michael J. Fox. He was a mailboy. He didn't have a degree, and he was a mailboy at this big company, and he would play the role like he was part of the firm in a bigger role. And he would take these lavish trips on, you know, the different places and these company meals and have the company credit card and the chauffeur pulling up. I'm still waiting on all this shit to happen at work, but you know. it was so dope. And I was like, man, I want to live that lifestyle. And I was like, man, I want to be at the top floor of a building overlooking the city. And I was like, okay, this is the lifestyle I would like to see. So that's what got me originally to the point. I was like, you know what? I want to go into the working world and try it out, not knowing that there was a lot of other things that goes into that. But that's what got me into wanting to say, hey, I want to put on a suit every day and come to work. Don't do that now, but.
Exactly. Because nobody tells you that, well, one, this is just a movie. Two, is not the majority of your working class ain't living like that.
That's very true.
They ain't working like that.
Very true.
What you typically, because I mean, I don't wear a suit to work now. You know, nice slacks, you know, something like that. But especially first coming out of college, that was a wake-up call.
Right, right.
Because you step in this work environment. I'll make it more personal. You know, I stepped into the work environment expecting something a little bit more, not even lavish, but I expected to be a bit more intellectually challenged and stimulated and have more enjoyment out of my job. And I didn't have that for a very long time, really probably up until the past 2 to 3 years on my current gig. And I've been in the corporate setting for 11 years now.
So, okay, what is your background now? Where's your starting point to where you're at now? Let's hear your story.
Okay, so my background, I went to NC State, North Carolina State University.
Wolfpack?
In Raleigh. Yeah, Wolfpack. Graduated with a degree in electrical engineering in December 07. I started working at Duke Energy, which is where I'm still working at now. Started working there in January 2008. So my first experience, my first job within Duke Energy after I graduated, was at a plant, at a nuclear plant.
That don't sound like the movie that you're talking about.
Not at all. Because
they wasn't bringing cars and black cards and parties that way.
Nah, you didn't have that going on at the plant. Nobody really gives you that reality check. Because when you're graduating from college, you're primarily looking for a career or a job within your career field, mm-hmm. wherever that may be. You just want to make a decent living. If you have student debt, you want to be able to make a decent living to pay that off, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. or be able to stack some bread.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I took that option. Plus, it was close to home. But, that work environment was not what I envisioned it would be like. I felt more like I was on a hamster wheel, where I'm just constantly cycling through, constantly running, but never really getting anywhere and not having any kind of sense of fulfillment.
That's a very interesting example you used. The whole running on a hamster wheel, not mm-hmm. getting somewhere. I mean, that's crazy to say that. You know, the fact that we do so much for so little,
mm-hmm.
and won't realize it till later on. It's not like it's how would I say it? A firsthand thing where we know right off that, oh, I'm running on this wheel, I'm not getting nowhere. It takes a while for you to realize, mm-hmm. like, I've been running here for some years and shit, I ain't went nowhere else.
Exactly. I'm still in the same place.
Exactly.
So what was it like for you? I mean, what was kind of your experience, you know, that first job out of college?
Well, okay. So my experience was a little different.
Yeah, because you went to the Navy
first. I was in the military first.
The military.
Yeah, I went to the Navy out of high school. And after the Navy, I actually introduced myself to the college world. And after college, I went to UNC Charlotte. After college, it was funny because I did an internship at Duke Energy, mm-hmm. Energy. And they offered me a position that took it away because of the housing market crash. That it's funny how the housing market crash affected everybody. It don't matter what sector you was in, it affects everybody. So the same position I got, I was interning for, they actually said, hey, we'll give you a position after you finish. They took away. But anyway, so after that, I got a job at Wells Fargo in 2011. It was like February 2011. Yep, I remember that. And I've been there ever since, last 7 years. And like you said, it's just been the same thing. It's no different. You know, my moves were from different cubes. I moved from one cube to another, one gray to another gray.
Uh-huh.
Then I guess I upgraded and got some wood in there somewhere. So I got some wood grain in my cube. But other than that, that's it. So for the past 7 years, I've been moving from one view to another view, but the same view. So one building to another building.
So let's talk about those views because, you know, we're talking about working while black. So we wanted to give y'all a backdrop of, you know, how we got to where we are. So, Jay, what are some of those things that you experienced that kind of, you know, if at all, made you feel like, man, I feel like I'm kind of in a minority here?
Well, it's funny because I went through different stages. That's why I said the whole example of the rat of the hamster wheel. It was funny because when I first got my job at Wells Fargo, I thought I was on top of the world. They took me up to like the 47th floor and it was like, let's go out on the terrace and
up in the
Duke Energy Building.
Yeah.
You know, I was young too. So I mean, you know, any young person probably would think, okay,
wow.
Shocking.
Mm-hmm.
Now they don't say that the pay we're gonna pay you don't afford this kind of stuff, but this is where you'll be working day in and day out. And I was like, I'm in the city, you know, the city of Charlotte where I'm from, but you know, you're working downtown. Mm-hmm. And part of that comes from, like I said, when you watch these movies that we watched when we were younger, I'm like, oh, I'm kind of in that area. You know, I'm kind of downtown. Okay. Yeah, that lasted not so long. But
that new car smell.
It's that new car smell. I mean, you know, I thought I was good. You know, I got that first couple checks. You know, I started traveling with the fellas. Oh, okay, this is good. But then reality sets in that this is not what you think it is. It's kind of like the Matrix. You mm-hmm. think you're in an area, but you're not. You start looking around, you're seeing different levels of things. Like, why am I one of 10 blacks in a place where there's 300 whites?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of deep when you think about it, that, you know, wow, why is it so little of us here compared to other
other ethnicities?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it'll start to get to you because you're like, man, I'm overpowered. So, you know, just to looking around and seeing, and then that goes to say that, you know, when you look at communities stick together. So if my community is only 10 deep compared to 300 deep, how do I get to achieve higher, you know, moves in an area that's not benefited to my community?
Right.
What about you, Ida? Was your environment or your scenery any different than that?
No. My work environment looked exactly like my college engineering classrooms.
Wow. Okay.
And if anybody knows anything about the typical demographics of an engineering population, it's predominantly Caucasian males, very few females, and depending on the type of engineering, you'll have some Middle Eastern, some Indians. Very few blacks, especially very few brothers, very few sisters as well. But that demographic from the college engineering classroom, you can pretty much overlay that with the demographics of the of corporate America. And that's regardless of most of the companies that you go to. You see predominantly middle-aged white males and very few blacks. And when I got to my first job out of college, it really wasn't that big of a wake-up call for me because I saw it in college. But it became more of a wake-up call for me when I realized every meeting I go to, every different job I take, every other company I go to and visit, it's the same. And so it makes you wonder why. So before we dig too deep into that, did you ever, during your work history, Jay, you ever felt maybe either overwhelmed or disrespected or belittled or patronized, either directly or indirectly, for being a black male?
Yes, I have. Yeah. Last year I had an HR case out.
Oh, just last year?
Uh-huh, just
Can
last
you
year.
Talk about the details or?
I guess. I mean, it was just basically a disrespectful thing where a particular lady in an area of our department that has nothing to do with me spoke to me real disrespectful, and you know, interrupting a conversation that had nothing to do with her, wasn't any place for her to, you know, to come and say anything, and she spoke real disrespectful and felt like she was justified to talk to you, me anyway. And it was me and another African-American guy talking. So she talked to both of us that way.
Yeah. Because so, there was too many of y'all at one place at one time. Because you know
crazy?
You can't have more than two.
Isn't that crazy? And
so what did she say? Like what? So you and your partner are talking.
Just... Right. It was basically, I guess, to set up the whole thing. It was early morning, about 8 o'clock. And, you know, when you first get into work, you know, you may put your computer down. You may get yourself together. And what happened was, you know, just a regular early morning. Hey, how you doing? How's you? You know, it was, if it's a close associate, you know, you kind of like, hey, you know, what's going on? How, you know, how's everything? You know, what y'all getting to this weekend? And as we're talking, the lady persists to come over and talk to us and say, hey, y'all don't need to talk anymore. I don't want to hear you talking. If it continues to talk, I'm going to come handle this.
Whoa. Now, this was a older white lady, sounds like.
Yes, Caucasian lady, yes.
Okay.
And she permits to walk over there and say that to us in a very loud voice where the people that were there that morning were up looking like, wow. And then she was like, you know, you're disturbing people around you, and I bet not hear this again.
As if her talking that loud was not disturbing anybody.
Exactly. So, what that transpired was, and I'm not gonna lie, it took me a minute to really think, what should I do?
Mm-hmm.
As a, you know, I was told from different people that, you know, that's one of those situations you can't just let slide, because the more we let stuff slide mm-hmm. in an environment like that, the more they're gonna allow it to go on.
So exactly.
That was my first HR case.
What was your first instinct?
Oh, I was real. I was real.
yeah,
real,
when that happened.
What's the word I want to use? I guess you could say,
hostile, irate.
Yeah,
pissed off.
All the above. I was my color.
Yeah,
I turned acting it.
I kind of
did something that, even though I look back, I don't think I was wrong. I walked to her desk after she walked to my desk, and I told her that the next time you want to speak to me, you can, you know, speak to me in a professional way, because I'm a professional just like you. And if you feel like you need to say something, you can either pull me to the side respectfully or email me. Otherwise, don't come and disrespect me. So
that's very professional and straight to the point.
Yeah, but then it's funny because you say that and then people can take that and say, oh, he was irate or he was aggressive.
But you know why? Because you're the black male.
But is that really justifiable to say that?
No. I know it's not justifiable, but that's the perception, and we see it all the time. We get disrespected, but then when we react, even in a professional manner, we're looked at as the stereotypical aggressive black male.
Right.
We're supposed to turn the other cheek. But what about the person who disrespected us in the first place?
Yep.
They don't get the same consequences. So why is the victimizer allowed to play the victim role and the victim villainized or vilified? And that's one of the things that we see, not even just the corporate setting, and we're not going stray from the topic that we're discussing, but we see that in all settings. You know, we see it with the protests, we see it with the police killings, you know, we see it in all these other settings. So even in the corporate setting, it still unfortunately is no different with certain people. So you had an HR case about that.
Right. So I went to HR about it. Yeah. And, you know, I told them what happened. And it's funny because now you think to yourself, or you learn that, is HR really for you? Or is it just for the company?
Yeah, because we hadn't always been seen as full humans. In some cases, we still are treated as 3/5 of a human. So how did that HR case go?
I mean, they basically did kind of like a slap on the wrist type thing. Talked to her, yeah. We gave her a coaching, and that was it.
That key word, coaching.
Yeah,
that's a cover phrase for we ain't do shit.
Exactly. But the funny thing to me, I always think in my head, let that have been me.
Oh, you might not have a job today.
Would the tables be different?
You might not have a job today. Best case scenario, you would have been demoted or transferred to another department.
Yep.
Because when the roles are reversed, we, again, if we're, in essence, in that example, the aggressor, if the shoe is on the other foot, oh no, she immediately goes into victim mode.
Yep.
And goes straight to HR or whoever, authorities, whatever the case may be. Uh-huh. And they're automatically going to take their side. That's usually how it goes, unfortunately. And, you know, in that example, you know, they use these vague words, coaching. Well, what are you coaching her on? How is that going to prevent this type of behavior from happening again?
Yep, you're right.
So have y'all had any interaction after that?
Nope, not at all. Just, you know, it is what it is. Pass high by a person, and ain't no high and by. Just,
oh yeah, just passing by. Yeah,
just passing by. So, you know, that's probably the most recent and probably the biggest thing that's happened in my 7-year career.
Working and, while black.
Other than that, I mean, just seeing people pass over you for, I guess, raises and promotions.
Yeah.
Even though you have way more experience or you have done more, you know, it's like, just no matter how you look at it, it's still a friend type game out in the corporate world.
Oh yeah, it's definitely the good old boys.
It very much is, and it's hard for you to win the good old boy system when it ain't enough for you to have enough for you to win. Like, I can see if it was more even, but it's not. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're what is it, 20-1 or 30-1, the numbers don't help you.
Nah, they don't. That's another thing we'll touch on a little bit later too, in terms of this diversity that a lot of companies claim to promote. But before I dive too deep into that, I'll give you a couple personal examples. So when I first started working at the plant, it was an eye-opening experience, not because of the disparities in racial demographics, but when I would pull up in the parking lot, 70% of the vehicles were pickup trucks with Confederate flags. Even one of the plants down in Hartsville, well, actually, it has nothing to do with the plant, but when you're first driving into Hartsville, South Carolina, that is, for those who don't know, there's a huge flagpole with the Confederate flag on it.
Well, that's a great welcome for your first day at work.
That's how I know I'm there. you made that left, and the plant's right there. Now, you know, the flag has nothing to do with the plant, so I'm not making the connection between the two. But with that example combined with, you know, the demographics that you see in the workforce, it's like, okay, so this is just a blatant slap in the face, but it's okay. that just goes unchecked because, you know, it's their personal vehicle. They can do what they want.
Yep.
So that's okay. Okay. So, yeah, that was a wake-up call for me. Now, I never had an experience like you had or where I felt like I was necessarily disrespected, called out of my name or any way, but some of the looks that you get as a black male in corporate America, especially when counterparts realize that you're their equivalent as far as seniority or above, it's almost like they don't believe it. They don't want to accept it. Even going out in public settings, I remember one time I was checking into a hotel and I was on a work trip and this guy, Caucasian male, was standing at the counter. He just kind of stared at me for a few seconds. And he never actually I spoke to him, because if somebody's staring at me, I just speak. You know, hey, how you doing? Because if you're going to stare at me that damn long, you might as well speak. So he kind of barely parted his lips, but he kind of made the face in disbelief, like, oh, what do you do? Like, I'm a project manager at Duke Energy. He's like, Duke Energy, huh? I said, yeah. And that was the end of the conversation. But just in that transpire, or those correspondence of words, I could tell that, one, he didn't think I was deserving of the position that I was in. Two, he didn't think that a black person was deserving of that type of position. And three, you're living in such a prehistoric time, because there's millions of successful minorities, black entrepreneurs, or black people in general, whether it's a corporate setting or an entrepreneurial setting. So, you know, it's just interesting, the mindset that a lot of people have. And another funny thing too, a lot of coworkers or a lot of colleagues, they'll speak to you when you're in a corporate setting because it's based on relation, you know, or proximity. But when you step out of that circumstance or out of that scenario, out of that building, and I've literally had this happen where folks that I've worked with on projects or different activities speak to me every day in the building, every day. See them on the street, walk right past. They'll walk right past. So that lets me know that the only reason that you are even engaging in conversation with me is because I'm your coworker. You don't really see me as an equal, as a person. You see me more as an object. But those are some of the bigger things that I've witnessed and that I've seen.
So you're saying that outside of work, they probably wouldn't be the same way?
Oh, a lot of them would not. Some of them would, because there are some coworkers, and let me make sure I'm clear on this. I'm specifically talking about coworkers of other races, specifically the dominant society of the Caucasian ethnicity. A lot of them I've hung out with outside of work, and they, you know, cool as hell. But a lot of them only speak or only engage in any kind of interaction with me because of proximity in the workplace. If it was not for that scenario, they probably wouldn't even speak. And I'm not saying everybody has to be buddy-buddy outside of the workplace, but damn, you know me, you can at least speak and acknowledge my presence. But those are more the things that I see.
I got you. It's funny because when you see certain, I won't say all, I'll never say all, and everybody's not the same, but
right.
A lot of times I see people outside of work and their demeanor is so different. It's more like a forced hello. It's sometimes a forced hello within the job
exactly.
section too. So
yeah.
It's a little tough, man, when you get a forced hello or forced introduction or presentation from somebody, you think about that differently when you see them and they want to talk to you in a different way. And a lot of times what I find working in corporate America, you get looked down upon a lot. Mm-hmm. And people don't understand that it really happens. Like, they don't have to tell you. You can tell people look down at you by your position or where you're at. So it's like a power thing, I feel like. People like power so much that they feel like, well, I'm above you, so I can talk to you anyway, or I can do certain things. That's not how the world works. Or people don't understand a business shouldn't work like that, because you're only as good as your team.
Right.
So that's some of the things I've noticed in the working world, where people get just a little taste of power, a little leg up, and they feel like they want to just come down on you differently than they remember that they used to be in that same position. So,
well, see, a lot of it isn't just that, but going back to the example that you mentioned where your case at work, she was talking to y'all like y'all were kids.
Well, like, she was different. I was a different person. I don't know what was going on with her that day, but
okay.
She and again, she didn't even have anything to do with anything kind of relevant to what I do at my job. So I don't know. She's just a different breed. Who knows why she felt the audacity to come say something, but she did.
So do you ever feel like you have to wear a mask, or have you ever, you know, whether subconsciously or consciously, worn a mask, meaning you kind of, you're not the normal Jay. You know, you dress a little bit different. You talk a little bit different when you move in a certain corporate settings.
When I first started, I danced to a jig. I ain't gonna lie. Mm. I was dancing and trying to say the right things, and I learned, you know, later that that's not me. You can't. How long can you play something that's not you? How long can you play a game that you don't want to play?
Especially when that does nothing to get you ahead anyway.
You're right.
As far as, you know, it might get you ahead in terms of a couple attaboys or a pass on the back, but for your respect, no, because people could tell when you're faking, and people don't respect fake.
So with me and my experience, like, I think now I still probably unconsciously wear some hat,
mm-hmm,
or wear some mask. And, you know, when I'm talking to people, I don't just say certain things. But, like, you know, after a while, you just do things different. Like, my dress is going from, oh, I got to look sharp to it's work, you know, yeah. Or just, you know, the way you used to, you know, sing and dance. And, oh, I'll listen to this person talk about their kids all day long, you know, it's to, like, well, you know, can you kind of get to the point so I can go do this work and, you know, go right home. So what about you, E? Do you still think you wear a mask or any different hats that you don't want to wear? Or
no, especially at the age of 33. I am who I am in the workplace with my partners, with my family. The only thing that changes is I don't cuss as much and I'm not as vulgar at work. But that's not for me wearing a mask. That's just having a certain level of professionalism, because regardless of somebody's race, if I'm in a corporate setting, then I'm not going to be using a bunch of slang, vulgar language. You know, there's a time and a place for everything. So that's regardless of the racial demographic that I'm around in a corporate setting. And it's interesting too, and just being myself, I seem to get a lot more respect than those who wear a mask and just kind of buck dance to any tune. Because people in a world full of, you know, fakeness and, you know, follow the leader and everybody trying to copy what they see, it's refreshing to have somebody on your team that's authentically them. Because like you said, you're only as strong as your team. And the differences actually make the team stronger.
Speaking of teams, do you feel like working in your environment that's actually always been a team, or they just called y'all a team?
Oh, no. This is on the team that I'm on now, the group that I'm in, yeah, I do feel like it's a strong team dynamic. In previous roles, oh, hell no. Because it was that good old boy mentality to where if you ain't on that inner circle, you're not getting those promotions and those opportunities. So that is just, that's code word. They say that because they're supposed to say it. That's just public relations. That just sounds good and looks good on paper to say that. But in, for most of my professional years, no, definitely have not felt like a team. There's been times to where on one of my previous jobs, they would be having a group lunch or a team lunch or whatever. I wouldn't even have none of the food. I wouldn't even go in there and partake.
Now, wait a minute, Eha. I have to bring this up. Now, I've known you for a long time. It's a lot of times we all go out and know you don't eat the food either. What's the reason for that?
No, that reason wasn't because I didn't like the food or whatever. I wouldn't, you know, I was trying to be health conscious or whatever. It was because y'all don't treat me like shit anyway. So why am I going to break bread with y'all? I don't break bread with people that I don't get down with.
It's funny. So you say that, right? So, But when you don't, they think you're wrong.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because there was a, they didn't explicitly ask that per se, but they, well, Ernest, we got some food in here. You're not going to join us? No, I'm good. I brought my lunch today.
Angry black man.
Don't yeah, that's, yeah, and I'm pretty sure that's how it came across, but nobody's looking at the full picture. They're just looking at this isolated incident of me not wanting to break bread or me not wanting to partake with these different activities. But I ain't about that fake shit. If I don't get down with you, and especially if I feel slighted in the work environment, especially, but in any environment, I'm not going to fake and pretend like I want to be your buddy.
It's funny because a lot of, when earlier in my career, they would always ask, so Jay, why don't you come out to the happy hours and stuff? And I'm like,
because I ain't happy.
This is not me. Like, you know, it's to me, it's like, if I can't talk to you at work about stuff that's either work or outside of work, I can't go to happy hours. Like you said, it's so hard to sit and break bread with a person that you don't feel comfortable with.
Do you feel more pressure? Do you think there's more pressure on black people in general, but black males specifically, to, you know, play that role versus, or as opposed to a Caucasian male?
Yes, because if we don't play the role, we don't go anywhere. We don't achieve more. Because it's a lot. It's, I can't say it. For the black males that are in corporate America that I do know, there are some that still dance till their feet hurt to make sure they get, you know, that bump up or that look.
That butter biscuit.
And it's not even guaranteed. It's like, I've known black brothers to dance to a tune and still get shit on.
Of course.
And it's like, you still gonna dance? You still gonna let them think that, you know, y'all buddy, but at the end of the day, you know, it's like, you still don't win. So what was all that dancing for? Exercise? Practice?
Man, cats will sell their soul for acceptance.
But when does it come down to the dollar that you're trying to get, or that promotion doesn't matter more than your well-being or your, what's the word? What's not well-being, but your conscience. When is your conscience coming to play? It's like, I need to stop not being who I am and be who I am. Let who
have
you
some
are.
Pride.
Is that, thank you. Thank you, but a lot of times we don't.
Well, we see that in all settings. I mean, you see it in entertainment, where people are, you know, black people are buck dance for that dollar. You know, we have so many examples of that. You know, Ray Lewis is one. You know, we see him buck dance all the time. You know, so many examples of that. And corporate America, you know, from the middle class worker, is no different. We will buck dance. A lot of us will buck dance till we can't dance no more.
But what does that come from, E? What is the underlining of that? Because to me, I feel like nobody tells you not to. The only thing we're taught coming into a corporate world is you got to do this. It's almost like they teach you to suck up, because they're like, when you come in, that's what we do, so you need to do it too. Nobody, it's like going to college and getting student loans. They didn't tell you not to. So how do you ever know what you're supposed to do?
You have to get advice from the right people.
When you're 10 to 300, it ain't too many right people around you. So if it's 100 people that work in your office, 10 of them are black, that means 90% ain't going to be the right people you want to talk to. Then you got 10%, and out of that 10%, five of them may be dancers as well, so they're going to tell you the wrong thing. So what you going to do with that 1-5% that you may can talk to?
Oh, just don't fuck with them. Because just because somebody, all skin folk ain't kin folk. So just that's because true. We may share the same skin in the same environment does not mean you have my best interest in mind. So in that example, you just don't deal with them. You don't take advice from somebody that you know you shouldn't be taking advice from, especially if they're not marching to the rhythm that you're trying to march to. So
sometimes you don't know the rhythm. Sometimes
we do now, though.
Yeah, but see, and prime example myself, when I first started, I'm not going to sit and say I didn't start walking to a beat. I did until I realized that's not what I should
right,
be doing.
Right, but you realized it,
but
though.
But look at the time I wasted. Look at the time I could have been actually being who I need to be. Hey. Yes, I was in a position for almost 5 years and no forward progression, but I was happy. I was like, shoot, at least I have my integrity that I'm being who I need to be. I mean, eventually it happened, you know, but in that time, it made me realize that this rap race is not where I need to be.
But see, that's why you go through that, though, to learn. Because even in that situation, even in the things that we've seen in this corporate setting and, you know, the times that you've been slighted, whatever the case may be, you learn from that. So, yes, while you feel like you may have wasted time, on the flip side, that's still valuable time because those are valuable lessons learned and you're still young. And what you can do now is teach the next generation at an earlier age, hey, you don't need to make that move. You're looking like a fool out here. Let's maintain your integrity, maintain your professionalism, be proud of who you are in your skin, and let's go get what we came to get.
So I'm curious. I'm going to throw a monkey wrench in here for you, E. Do you think it would be the same at a predominantly black company?
It could be depending on the type of black that you're around. Because again, I was skin
so
folk.
So it's different
and
black
folk.
Then out here.
Of course. Hey, just because we have on black skin or we share this black skin does not mean that we have the same mentality. Does not mean we have the same values or integrity. Again, going back to the example you used about when you were buck dancing or the people that you have mm-hmm. seen mm-hmm. dance to that rhythm. There are black companies that will probably still fit that same mold of the type of person that you don't need to pattern yourself after. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you have to look at the content of character more than anything else.
I think it's interesting. One of the things I thought about one day, it just hit me. We have times where the groups within our company come together, the different ethnic groups. So you have like the black and African American group, and you have the Latino group, and you have
LGBT.
Yeah, LGBT.
And whatever other letters they got.
Yeah, not trying to offend anybody, but you know, they have that group come together. Are there any Caucasian groups?
Yes.
What?
It's called White America. It's the biggest group there is.
But no, real talk though. If you really think about it, is there actually a group made for them? And is it?
No, because those are minority groups. Exactly. They're the majority.
So that shows you that we are so far behind. Yeah. And I was thinking about, I was like, man.
The fact that you
y'all don't
have
need
those
a group.
Groups.
So we need a group. Y'all don't need a group. Oh, okay. I got you.
Right. Just the fact that you have to have those groups lets you know that y'all don't really want us here anyway. It's like a joke Chris Rock said, and we're going to, you know, get ready to wrap it up here shortly. But it's like a joke Chris Rock said when he was talking about minimum wage. Minimum wage just means that you can't pay me any less. You want to pay me less, but you can't. That's what minimum wage is. I'm going to pay you the absolute minimum because by law I can't pay you any less, although I really want to. So when you talk about these diversity groups or these inclusion groups or minority groups, you have to have them because, or in a company's mind, we have to have it because if we don't, we look like we are non-inclusive. So it's more about public relations and visual aesthetics than anything else.
So it's a smoke screen.
A lot of times it is. I mean, even when we talk about the whole thing of diversity, I tell people this all the time, you know, because diversity has been, you know, a hot topic over the past, you know, several years, probably at least a good decade now. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I noticed several years ago, when I started looking at the top of the corporate ladder down, you don't see any diversity at the top.
Nope.
So if you look at the bottom, you see more of your color folks. You see more of your Black, your Hispanics, more of your minority groups. So yeah, if you look at the company as a whole, it may seem diverse. You know, 20% of our workforce is Black, 15% are women, 10% are Hispanic, or, you know, whatever other minority groups you want to throw in there. But let's look at the diversity at the top. Across the board, regardless of which company, which major companies you look at, the majority of them are ran by middle-aged white males. So where is this diversity? Let's be more strategic about diversity, because that's becoming more of a vague term. Where's the diversity in the pay? Where's the diversity in the layout of the corporate setting? Because it's not enough to just have diversity or hire people of a diverse background. Do you have a diverse work setting? Do you have a diverse culture versus just having a myriad or a gumbo of people in your organization?
Well, I'm with you. I'm definitely with you. I look at it all the time. It's not a lot of people that look like me in that top majority. You know, even if your CEO is Black, you still got to look at the numbers below him. He has a team of people that reports him that's still majority Caucasian.
Right.
So what does that make you? Just because we got one of us up there means we doing something? No.
Yeah.
Still behind.
Yeah, we are. We have a long way to go. But the key to all this is the things that me and you talk about all the time, Jay. Building our own so we don't have to rely on anyone else.
Very true.
To give us a pass or open a door for us or say yes. We make our own yeses.
That's the best way to do it.
That's the only way to do it. That's the only way to do it. Don't climb somebody else's ladder. Make your own ladder. Grow your own trees and make your own wood so you can make your own ladder.
That's true.
So with that, Jay, you got anything you want to close it out with?
Nah, just for anybody listening, to pass on this wealth of knowledge. I'm not going to say everybody's going to agree with what we say, but, you know, if you do, pass it on. Because I wish I had more insight before I went to the corporate world and tried to climb the corporate ladder just to see that I was on the step stool. So I just kind of wish, you know, if you're out there and you're listening, pass it on to somebody. Let somebody else know some of your experiences if you've experienced the, you know, corporate world, and just give them that insight that we have or you have, so they can be a little bit more ahead when they jump into that first job or next job.
And the only last thing I would say with that is be open to other avenues to success outside of just the typical 9-to-5 corporate setting. Trade school, skill sets, entrepreneurs. Those types of skills is what is going to help build a dynasty.
Oh, you're right. And I know we got to go, but I really hate that people sleep on trades. Yeah. Trades are amazing things. They think trades don't lead to money. And I know you shouldn't always look at the money, but a trade can lead to money just like anything else. You say you're going to learn how to cut hair. Only thing you're doing is cutting hair, but maybe you'll own a barbershop. You want to work on cars. You think you're just going to be a mechanic, or maybe you're going to own the shop. There's so many other ways to look at it. People don't. That, you know, instead of, you know, taking a high road and saying, let me learn something, they just don't. They'd rather say, I ain't going to do that. I'm just going to work for the company. In essence, you're working for them. So
yeah, and we'll have another session just to talk about different avenues to success. But
right,
yeah, trades definitely are valuable, because none of your infrastructure exists without trades. Heat and air, electricity, plumbing. You don't have any infrastructure without those trades. So with that, we're going to get ready and wrap it up. But, you know, as always, we always appreciate our listeners For those who are following us, you know, we always appreciate the continued support. For those who are not following us just yet, be sure to check us out. Hidden Truths Podcast on all social media platforms. Episodes are uploaded bi-weekly, so be sure to subscribe, like, and share. We're building here, y'all. We're building. As always, kings and queens, stay up. We out.